Hey, welcome to Calum Science, everybody. My name is Chris. Glad that you're here online. I just know that there's many reasons why you're online this weekend. I know for a lot that you just don't feel comfortable being in a room with other people for church. We're so glad that you're here. I know others, they don't want to come because they don't want to wear a mask, and that's kind of a bummer. And so we get that too. And so we want to say welcome to you as well. For others, you are on the outskirts of our city, in our area, province, country. We're glad that you can tune in, that online is actually a gift. I'm talking to people. I'm getting emails from some of you just saying, thank you for being online and being able to serve you in this way. So welcome, all of you, whoever you are. Welcome to Calum Science. Thanks for being here. Another way that you can actually be a part of this, if you're online, we are looking for some online hosts, some people to kind of say, hey, welcome to Calum Science, and send some links. The people who are probably typing in right now, wherever you are, YouTube or whatever platform you're on, we would love for you, if you feel comfortable, to be on board with us and serve with us in that way. So just go to our website, go to the serve kind of icon there and sign up, and we'd love to train you and get you in. So if you'd like to be an online host, let us know. We are looking. All right. We are continuing our series in the world anew, the best sermon ever preached in the Sermon on the Mount. John D. Rockefeller, born in 1839, died in 1937. Rockefeller was one of the most wealthiest Americans of all time. He was famous, actually, saying when somebody asked him, with all of his wealth and all of his money, people asked him, how much money is going to be enough? And what he famously answered was, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. So in 1999, Martha Stewart, y'all know Martha Stewart, the recipe books, the kind of the mom on TV cooking and all that stuff. She took her company public in 1999, and just in one day, more than doubled her net worth. Over one day, she made her net worth increase by hundreds of millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars, 1999. After this, with her stockbroker, they got an inside tip and they sold a bunch of stock. They figure that this reallocation of some of her stock saved her about $50,000. But this tip, she was found out that she lied, and they covered it all up. And so because of this, Martha Stewart ended up going to prison for 5 months. She stayed at home under house arrest for five more months and then 2 years of probation. And this completely brought her company and her brand and all that down to the ground. Over $50,000. She made hundreds of millions of dollars when she went public with her company, but because of this, over $50,000, she ruined a lot. Not everything, but a lot. And so when you think to Rockefeller, just a little bit more. That drive in Martha Stewart, just a little bit more, kind of signifies the culture that we live in, the air that we breathe and the water that we swim, of just a little bit more. This culture of consumerism and me and more and stuff and things is what we're getting at this weekend. And Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, understands that in the human heart, there is a desire, there are loves, there are joys that we long for, that we pursue. And here he's going to reorient us this weekend with some of these things. And so as consumers, we are conditioned. We are conditioned to believe that stuff and things are all we have. But Jesus is going to come and fulfills our desire and proves to be all we need. We think this is all we have, but Jesus is all that we actually need. And so we're going to look at this in Matthew chapter 6. I would love for you to get out your Bibles, Matthew chapter 6, as I kind of lead you through here on the screen as we go through this. And here's what we're going to see this weekend. Two treasures, two eyes, and two lords, verses 19 to 24 in Matthew chapter 6. And here we go, two treasures. Verse 19, Jesus famously says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. This is the first thing he talks about, treasures on earth. Well, what are treasures? It's money, it's things, and it's stuff. Money, things, and stuff are the treasures of earth. We like these things because they equal joy. They give us something. We like the money because it gives it. We like the stuff because it gives us joy. So do not store up for yourselves joy on earth. That's what he is saying here in this first point. treasure is money, things and stuff, and the joy, the reputation, the esteem that it gives us. Now, I need to pause because I want to give a disclaimer that can be applied to all of this message. Because oftentimes when we think of money, things, and stuff, we go all judgy, all right? And we think about those people or that person who has that thing or that, whatever that is. And we look outward to everybody else and we start to judge people for their stuff, their money, their things, their stuff. But Christianity, again, is looking at the heart. Jesus here is looking at the heart, not just the outward appearance. And so in another text, 1 Timothy 6:10, Paul is writing to his mentor. And he says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It's the love of money that is the problem. So oftentimes we want to get all judgy, look outward. But here Paul is saying it's the love of money. So listen, Jesus, the New Testament, the teaching of Christianity is not prohibiting things or money. We need things. We have to have money. That's not the point. The point is the disordered love of those things. See, Christianity is looking, it's investigating. Jesus is investigating the motivations of the heart. It's the love of money. And so you can have no money, no things, and still love money too much. In the same way that you can have lots of things and love money too much. But the opposite is also true. That for some, you don't have anything, but you don't love money. And it's also true that you can have all things and still not have money. It's about the orders of your loves. And so when Jesus is coming at us, saying, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. This is the disordered love that he is talking about. What does he say? Where this part, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. There's moths, vermin, and thieves. And all of these, Jesus is saying that all of these joys, the money, the stuff, the things, that they are temporary, that they will not last. That's the point of this. And so this leads us to the myth of consumerism, the myth of consumerism. And this is kind of this cultural analysis that we've been trying to focus in on in this series, the myth of consumerism. So what is consumerism? Consumerism, simply put, is this: I am what I own. I am what I own, the money, the stuff, the things, that they define me, that I am wrapped around all of these things because this is who I am. And consumerism, this is what it teaches us. And the belief, the core belief of this worldview is that the more we have, the better off we will be. How much money is too much money? Rockefeller says, just a little bit more. That this is what I am, that the more we have, the better off we will be. So this happens all the time. Right now, my cell phone contract is coming up. And there is this lure. There is this temptation. It's tantalizing to think of the new iPhone 13 and the new iPhone this. And honestly, I have never once complained that my phone is too slow, that my phone isn't working. It picks up the calls. It runs the apps. It does all these things. But as I'm talking to different service providers, what are they doing? They're saying, hey, guess what? If you do this, then I can get this new phone. Why? This is consumerism. The one that I have works completely fine. And yet I find myself searching what the iPhone 13 can do. Why? Because it offers us assurance, comfort, ease. Assurance, comfort, and ease. And the fact that people will like it. Oh my goodness, is that the new iPhone? Yeah. Look at what it can do, right? The esteem that we get, the reputation that we get from our money, our stuff, and our things. And every spring, it's time to clean out the garage, it's time to clean out the storage places or the shed. And so we fill up the back of our van, I borrow a friend's truck, and we go to the dump. And if you go to the dump, you can see consumerism in action all the time. I feel bad when I go to the dump because I'm throwing out things. It's like there's really nothing wrong with it, but the shiny allure that it once had, we've used up, and now here it goes. And so you drive by, and there's piles upon piles of stuff. And what does it tell us? That you and I are consumers. There's a documentary made in the United States called Affluenza. And they found that Americans, and I'm sure it's the same as Canadians, throw away enough each year to fill a convoy of garbage trucks halfway to the moon. We throw it, Americans throw out enough garbage in 1 year to fill an envoy of garbage trucks halfway to the moon. And so this is the air which we breathe and the water in which we swim, the myth of consumerism, that you and I can be happy that all we are is walking around, we're a big walking appetite, which leads to this, the erosion of telos. And you're like, what in the world? The word telos defined is purpose or destiny. Destiny. The erosion of the purpose or destiny of what a human being is. Because we are so focused here on the here and now, the stuff and the things, that we lose sight of what is a human being supposed to be. Are we supposed to be a walking appetite for stuff and things and money? Is that what we're supposed to be? So the telos, think of it this way. The telos of an acorn is an oak tree. That's what it should naturally grow into. Because of consumerism, you and I lose our telos, the end, the proper destiny of a thing. So consumerism distorts our telos because why? We just live for now. We store up treasures here on earth. And when we don't have a destiny, when we don't think about the big questions like, what's a human being supposed to be? When we don't have a good answer to those questions, what we end up doing is we end up settling for counterfeits now. And this is what Jesus is diagnosing in the human condition. He is saying, do not store up for yourselves treasures, money, stuff, and things that give us joy on earth. Don't forget about the telos of your life, which is, as we're going to see, him. All right, so the erosion of telos. Then he keeps going. This is, he says, but store up for yourselves treasures, which we have said is joy. Joy in heaven. You have two choices. Is it going to be on earth or is it going to be in heaven? And this is the telos, the end goal, that you as a human being should not just be living for the here and now and doing all these things. Rather, we should be thinking about the end, where our joy is actually found. But store up for yourselves joy in heaven. Again, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Here's what Jesus is doing. He is redirecting our joy from here to there, from now and to then. And so Jesus here is redirecting our desire, not squashing it. What he is saying is, yes, have these things here now, but don't forget about the future, about joy in the future, joy in heaven. And I love that Christianity here, how it works with human desire, that you and I are desiring people. We like stuff and things. And there's some things of that I think are good. It's the disorder of our loves that is the problem. So Jesus here isn't saying squash those desires. He's saying get a better one, get a truer one, get a more fulfilling desire, not just the things of the here and now. Jesus is saying to us, you and I need a better love, a better love. Sure, the things here are nice, but there's something better in the future that you can experience today. So this leads us, me, our discussion this weekend into investigating a sermon from an old Puritan. His name is Thomas Chalmers in the 18th century. He preached a sermon called The Expulsive Power of a New Affection. The Expulsive Power of a New Affection. He wrote a little book. And so it really has been kind of this manifesto of human desire, the expulsive power of a new affection. And what he says, it's not about destroying our old habits or loves, it's about replacing them with a new one. And so here's what Thomas Chalmers says. He says, the way to disengage the heart from the love of one great object is to fasten it to another. The way that you get a treasure or your joy then is to unfasten it from the one that you are experiencing now. He says, it's not about exposing the worthlessness of the old affection, but exposing the worth and excellence of a new one. Do you see what he's saying? He says, in order to live a full life, in order to have ordered loves, what we need is not to squash the desires that we have now, but to find a truer, better, and more beautiful desire. And this for me was a completely paradigm shifting realization and experience with me growing up in the church. Because I grew up in the church and I always thought that I just had to stop desiring, stop doing this and stop doing this. And that's true. But how do you stop doing that? Oftentimes, cold religion, the worst of religion. When you think, I think religion is a good word, but in this way, in the coldest, worst way possible, religion is just this behave, and change yourself. Grit your teeth and do it. But that's not the way that Jesus here is offering change. What is he saying? He's saying it's not just the cold religion of stopping this behavior. He says it's that you need a better love. You need me to store up for yourselves joy in heaven. That's what he is inviting us into. And this is where we see the gospel, that when we are saved by Jesus, when we actually start to delight in Jesus, when we start to take joy in Jesus, that he becomes his person, his work, his presence, he becomes our greatest joy that we can experience today and experience for eternity in heaven. This is the invitation of this passage, that our hearts get rewired to love something more than the thing that you love now. It is about joy. And there's a better, truer joy. Jesus is offering it to us. So then he says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is just a true statement of how the universe works. Jesus is saying, everyone has a ruling ambition or desire, a ruling love. Where is it and what is it? For some of us, it's work. For others of us, it's success. It's sex. It's pleasure. It's esteem. It's reputation. Every single one of us has a ruling desire that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This desire will orient our entire person, our entire gravity of ourselves towards this idea. And this is what leads us to the second point here. The two eyes in verse 22 and 23. Developing that idea of what is your ruling ambition, your ruling desire. Jesus then tells a parable in verse 22. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, so it's based on the idea of a metaphor. If your eyes are healthy, the metaphor of the eye. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And so what does this mean? And there's been a lot of different interpretations as far as what this parable actually means. I'm going to draw my conclusions from a guy named John Stott. Stott says this, that this is a question of vision and where your eyes are set. He's talking about ambition through the eyes and where it is. So what Stott says, and I think he's right, he says, just as your eye gives vision to your body, he says, if you have a ruling ambition that is godly, if your joy is set in heaven, he says, then all of that will impact your life. There will be joy and light and hope and faith and relationship when the ruling ambition of our life is one that is defined by God. He says, similarly, if we have a vision that is dark, that is not godly, if we are storing up for ourselves treasures here on earth, this is the parable, then our whole lives will reap the benefits or the consequences of this ruling ambition. Jesus is saying to us, Your goals will devour you, whether they are good or bad. And the way that you steward your treasure will have a dynamic impact on your life and relationships. And this is just true. This is true, that if your ambition is godly, then that will reap benefits on your life. And it is, if it is ungodly, it will also bring consequences as well. There's a great example of this, of workaholism. Suze Orman, she's a popular financial expert. She says that when she was a little girl, her father's business caught fire. And she remembers vividly her father dashing inside the burning building, grabbing the hot metal cash register with his bare hands and running out. He fell to the ground, writhing in pain with scorched hands. That image was burned in her mind, that he would risk his entire life to go into this burning business to bring the cash register out at a great cost to himself. So if our ruling ambition is success and gain, notoriety, there will be consequences that come to our lives because of that. But if we set our hearts on things above, if our ruling joy of our life is Jesus, then we will reap the consequence or the benefits of that. And I love this, that this is how the world works. This is just a true statement of reality. This is ultimate reality according to Jesus of Nazareth. This is how the world works. I read this a little while ago in a book. He quoted a philosopher who said this: when you go against the grain of the universe, you get splinters. So Jesus is saying, if this is your ruling ambition, good will come. If it's not, darkness will come. The example that I gave is workaholism, but you can trace this out with whatever ruling desire, ambition, love that you have in your life. If it's Jesus, it'll be good. If it's not, it will end in disaster. And even just on a pastoral level, when we think about workaholism, I have sat with people closer to the end of their life who amassed all that you could want, but were as lonely and bitter and depressed as anybody could be, because they sacrificed the most important relationships in their life in order that they would have all of these things. So this is true. When you go against the grain of the universe, you get splinters, according to Jesus. So the two lords now, this is how it ends in verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Look at what he says, the word serve. Serve two times, beginning and end. The root word of this word in the original language, to serve, is where we get the word servant. The Greek word is doulos, the root of it. No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus here is pointing out something that is true in the human experience, that we are going to be a slave. We're going to be a servant of something. Either stuff here or stuff there, either now or either Jesus, that you will be a slave to something. So right now, the idea of freedom is one that is so central to our culture. I want to be free. I want to be free. I don't want to be a slave. I don't want to be a servant. I want to be free. So we're free to do what we want, when we want, with who we want, all of those things. And so this is the modern idea of freedom, is freedom from any restraint to do what I want. But here's the irony with the modern conception of freedom, is that in your freedom, you actually become a slave to the primal desires of your flesh. You're not free at all. You are actually enslaved to the innate primal desires that every human has. And so in our desire to be free, we actually become enslaved as well. Now, this is what Jesus is pointing at, that we will be a slave to something. And Jesus here is inviting us into a different type of service. Not to the flesh, not to these things of money and power and esteem and gain, but rather to God, to be a servant to God. And when we become a servant a slave to God and Jesus and the kingdom of, and life in the kingdom of God, we actually get the freedom that we want. Freedom, not just from everything, but freedom to be something. And here Jesus is giving the audacious invitation that the things that have gripped your life, your disordered loves that have led you to relational chaos, financial chaos, you actually can be dead to those things. That $100,000 can be placed in front of you, and because of the work that Jesus is doing in your life, because he is your truest joy, there's no temptation to sacrifice anything for it. There's no temptation to cut morals. Why? Because what he is doing in your life, he is your greatest joy, the freedom to enjoy life and life with Jesus. He says, either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. And here, Jesus is drawing a line in the sand. You cannot serve. You cannot be a servant to both God and money. You cannot share your loyalties. Choose who you will serve. The idea here of money is the word mammon. And mammon is kind of the things of this world. So it's not just money here, it's stuff, it's notoriety, it's esteem, it's gains, it's success. That's what he is saying. You cannot choose both. You will serve something, and you cannot choose both. This past Monday, I was out with my wife. We're in a season now where our kids are in school on Monday mornings, and so we actually have time together. It's like, what in the world happened? Like, this is amazing. And so we're out doing some errands, and I see at the North Hills Mall here, at the post office, I see there that there's a picture of a guy, and it said, this store sold the $35 million winning ticket to this person. So there he is with the picture. And I see this, and Chris is sending something through the mail, and I see this guy, and he's $35 million. And so I just start to think about, it's so tantalizing to think about, $35 million. Oh, man, like, I get in the car, and she's like, oh, you know, she sent this Halloween costume to somebody. Anyway, so she's talking about this, and all I'm thinking about is like this $35 million. And so I started to talk to her about it. Like, man, imagine winning $35 million. Like, what would you could live off the interest of that. You could set generations up for success and financial freedom and all of these things. And I noticed that my heart started to get drawn to this thing. And then on Tuesday morning, I start to read this. Start to read Jesus. You cannot serve both God and money. And the Lord just said to me, Chris, where is your joy found? Where is it found? Is it found in the freedom that finances can give you? Is it found in your success, your notoriety? Where is your joy found? And Jesus here this weekend is drawing a line in the sand and saying, where will you be? What will you love? See, if Jesus isn't your greatest joy and your greatest love, then Christianity just becomes cold-hearted religion. The point of all of this is that you would treasure him more than anything else. And in doing so, you become the person you long to be. We need to make the decision this weekend, the decision that our lives will not serve the prerequisites of success, awards, appointments, salaries, or mammon, that we will serve Jesus. And so, what now? I want to draw just three implications from this. The first one is this. We need to reflect on Jesus as the one who has loved properly when we have not. The point of this sermon is not that you would go and try harder. That's not the point. Just go try harder. Go try harder. Grit your teeth. No, no, no. The point is to accept that we have tried, as Jesus says, we've tried to serve both God and mammon, and it hasn't worked. We've had divided loyalties. The point of us is to come face to face with the teaching here of Jesus and to say, wow, I have disordered loves. My heart flutters at 35 million or a new iPhone. That I have divided loyalties. Oftentimes when we read the Bible, we think we're the ones that are squeaky clean. Jesus here is indicting all of us. The point of this weekend is not that you would try harder, but to realize that he has loved you when you have not loved him in return. That you have had and you have disordered desires. And the point this weekend then is to realize what Jesus has done for us that we can't do, and given to us what we don't deserve, that our sin and our folly and our disordered loves has led us to a place of false ambition that has led to bad outcomes relationally, physically, financially, spiritually, and that we need Jesus to forgive. And in his forgiveness and in his acceptance of you and I who have disordered loves, this is how he becomes your true treasure. To see that all of heaven is yours, that his presence and his kingdom and life in his kingdom and the blessings of life in his kingdom is available to you now and will be forevermore when we store our joy in heaven. This weekend is all about, do you actually love Jesus? Or do you just love the things that he can give you? Because if Jesus is our treasure, when we give up the self-salvation projects that we have, realize that we have fallen short, then we see that Jesus is our treasure. That's the first reflection. The second one is that we need to reclaim Jesus as the telos of our lives, as the end, destiny, or purpose of our lives, and not things, stuff, money, gains, or success. That Jesus in the Gospel of John says, I am the bread of life. We need to reclaim that now to say, I will not look at these smaller created things to fill the void in my soul. Number three, as a response to Jesus, as a response to who he is in his life and in his death and in his resurrection, as a response to the good news of the gospel, we need to imitate Jesus in his simplicity. If you think about the life of Jesus, the way that he lived his life as a perfect human being, we also need to imitate that life in our simplicity. We need to practice simplicity, to uncomplicate and untangle your life so you can focus in on what really matters. A yes to another project, a yes to another business deal, a yes to another recreational home, a yes to this. What that does is it complicates and tangles your life so that you don't focus in on what truly matters. That in practicing simplicity, we gain through loss. We gain through loss by saying no to that extra thing, by saying no to that raise, by saying no to this new job, by saying no to this. What we do is we untangle ourselves. So we simplify our lives with media, with words, with technology, with our ambitions, with our ventures, so that we can focus in on storing up for ourselves treasures in heaven. You and I are invited to practice simplicity. And in doing so, we realize that Jesus truly is the bread of life. That in doing so, we serve him as ultimate love of our lives. So there's a discussion question. I'd love for you to explore that, either by yourself in a journal or in conversation with the people you're in the room with right now. So Lord, I pray that you would give us an undivided heart, that our love for you would grow, that the expulsive power of a new affection would take root in our lives, and so that we wouldn't just be gritting our teeth and trying more to obey, but rather you taking center stage in our lives, you being the ultimate love of our lives, that then we would experience life, true life, transformative life with you. In your name I pray, amen. Hey, thanks again for trusting us. We love you. See you next time.